Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Steve Court joins us now, former Saints offensive lineman, co-host of First Take. Hey, Steve, how you?
Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
Tell me what you saw yesterday. Tell me what you saw yesterday.
Well, it's two pretty evenly matched teams it was a defensive game for sure. It was a hard-fought game. But nevertheless, when you look at it and there's 17 points scored off turnovers, four of them for us, that is that's a killer.
Yep. In terms of the defensive play, there are a lot of good defensive plays on both sides in terms textbook pass defense, huh?
Yeah, they played pretty well yesterday. I think that Tampa sort of stepped their game up, obviously, from the first two games that we had played them and played in a they really, really were able to sort of they really blanketed our receivers pretty well. And I thought that was sort of a testament to them. I mean, that was pretty good. And then I think they did a lot of zone yesterday, which really they were able to sort of get pressure with three and four guys, and in doing so, dropping eight is tough. And I think that's a lot of times what happened yesterday. I think there were some guys that sort of snuck in there right away. I can remember the Devin White interception was, right there in front of him. But at the same time, it's that sort of it's that zone defense that confused him, I guess.
So why didn't Tampa Bay do that in the first two games, and why couldn't the Saints counter that yesterday?
Well, as you recall, the first two games, the first one was pretty much back and forth, and the second one was an absolute blowout by halftime. So it really wasn't You can sort of throw that one away. That's kind of an anomaly. You can kind of take that one and throw it out because that wasn't really representative of NFL football being we did everything we did was perfect that day, and everything they did wasn't, and that was kind of the culmination of that. But I think the ebbs and flows of different games, we know each other well. And they made some really good adjustments against us, and I think they tried to sort of turn the table on us from the standpoint of being able to run the football. They did a better job of running the football, and it wasn't great on their part, but they certainly ran it 45 times, I think, for 132 yards, 135 yards, something like that. And again, we ran it 30 times, which was, you looked at it, pretty balanced. We ran 60 plays. I think losing Deontay Harris hurt us bad. I think that was a situation that our return game looked like it was just going to dominate the game. When he goes out, it certainly changed the dynamic of that. The hidden yards there, I think that we were sort of going to get. Wasn't there any longer.
It seemed like, and maybe I was just, looking the wrong way, but it seemed like Tampa Bay controlled the line of scrimmage on both sides.
They did a much better job. I'll tell you this. Look, I think offensive line-wise, compared to, I think that we have a better offensive line, but they have a good offensive line. Don't get me wrong. But they certainly played well yesterday, and they certainly played much better than they played in the previous two games against us. And so, look, the ball came out of Brady's hands pretty quick yesterday. don't think we sacked him at all. So that really wasn't representative of a lot of pressure. We didn't get a lot of pressure on him yesterday like we had in the previous two games that sort of really threw him off his spot. And I think that probably was a testament to their offense not only that, but getting the ball out of his hands so quick.
What about Latavius Murray not being there? Taysom Hill? How much do you think there would have been a different result had they been in the game? Because if that happens, then maybe Drew's not in the position that he's in. Maybe the turnovers don't happen. What do you think?
Well, yeah, you can speculate a lot on those. I mean, if things were different, then it would have been a different game. But again, I don't know if the fact that having Latavius there would have made that big of a difference. I think Alvin did a pretty good job yesterday of running the football and doing a good job of that against a pretty good defensive front that has really, really helped teams to, I don't know, 80 yards a game typically. And we eclipsed that, but nonetheless, they just made some big plays at big times, and typically they were ones that came off turnovers, which was really a killer. If you look at the stats, and the stats will tell you that turnovers are one of the major factors in a game, and usually it comes down to a turnover, and then when you're minus four. I mean, that is you have really shot yourself in the foot. And, the fumble killed us that there, when Jared Cook fumbled that ball, that just, mm-hmm. We were really on our way on a good, pretty good run there. And that hurt. And then, and obviously the picks that Drew threw, those are killers. And it's just unfortunate that it had to end that way.
If you look at the stats, time of possession, rushing, passing, et cetera, it's really a very close game. And like you're saying, the difference of those four turnovers. But then again, the Saints did leave some points out there, right? Because you get the two big punt returns. One of them called back. And I don't think that was really an aggressive behind-the-back block, but it still was. And you can't do that, you know. But
I don't think the referees really had an influence in the game whatsoever. That it really, those were legitimate penalties, and so I don't think that they had any kind of a negative influence on the game whatsoever.
No, if anything,
they did a pretty good job.
Yeah. It was positive. Saints got five first downs by penalty, so think you can blame it on the officials at all. We're going to take a break. We're coming back. I want to talk to you, Steve, about as a player, when it was your time to take off the pads and retire, how did you know that? And talk about Drew Brees, and do you think that we've seen the last of number nine, and I say in a Saints uniform, because I can't imagine him going to play anywhere else, or at least in the NFL. Steve Kortz, our guest. If you have any questions or comments, text them to the WWL Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870, and I'll pass them along. And then Zach Streifs could join us in the second half of this hour as we talk about the Saints' final game of the 2020 season. We'll be back. 9:21 now, and we're talking to Steve Kortz, as we always do every Monday after a Saints game, which means this is our final Monday because the season ended yesterday. Steve, before we get to retirement and Drew Brees and everything, how would you evaluate – and again, it's a team sport. Yesterday, I think, was a complete and total team loss in every way. Would you agree with that or not?
Yeah, I don't think we played our best football yesterday. There's no question about that.
Everybody had a hand in it. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, it wasn't like it was this devastating blowout to where we just got owned. It was just one of those things where they just made bigger plays when they had to, and they capitalized on our turnovers, and that's what good teams do, especially this time of the year.
So when it comes to like Jared Cook, I would say maybe inconsistent would be generous. What do you think?
As far as his play yesterday?
In general, the season, yeah.
I think he's a guy that's he's so athletic. He's a big target, makes great catches. Does good things for us. I think he was always one of those kind of guys that was right on the verge of breaking out and being really one of the top tight ends in the league. I still think he has that capability. But he didn't have a great game yesterday. But nonetheless, it was it wasn't just him.
No, I understand that. That's why I prefaced it by saying it was a complete and total team loss. There's no doubt about that. I was just
sure.
I just wondered about your evaluation of him throughout the whole season, and we can go to the other players as well. Alex Anzalone, your take on him?
Yeah. Well, look, Alex, couldn't get on the field really when Quan Alexander was there. So he came in, and I thought he did a really good job of filling in for that situation. But, look, teams look at that, and they look at if there's a chink in the armor somewhere to beat on that weakness and to bang on that, and they do it over and over and over again until they break it. And so they felt like they could target him a little bit and sort of isolate him and did a pretty good job. And I thought Alex did played a pretty good game, really.
So what was going on when we tried these screen passes? I don't know if it was a timing or it was like a pass out to the flat or something, but there was nobody out there to either block or they weren't in the TV picture or something. I don't know, but it would seem like they'd throw the pass and then there was nothing. One specifically with the tight end, Josh Hill, I think. And he was just out there left on his own. What happens on something like that?
I think a lot of times like that, they are in a situation to where they're in a defense that, if you watch that, he blocks and then he sort of like kind of lets the blocker go and then sort of trickles behind him and they throw that out there and they hope to catch these guys, Drew looking down the field the other way. And what happens was they had guys that were specifically on that tight end on Josh and they said, we're not going to let you do this. So, that's a tribute to playing pretty good defense, and they had their linebackers yesterday had a great game against us.
Yeah, it seemed like they knew what we were doing before we could do it. I wasn't sure that they only had 11 of them on the field, Steve. I had to pause it and count occasionally because it seemed like they had about 15 of them out there. So let's talk about retirement. No, go ahead, finish. What were you going to say about the defense?
No, I'm just saying that what they call good defense is at good times against the plays we had, and that's part of the chess game that you play, and they won their fair share of those yesterday. Yeah.
When it comes to you and your career, when you knew it was time, when did you know it? Did you know it the season going into it? Did you know it a couple of games into it? Toward the end, what was your specific case?
Well, I don't know if mine was unique or not. I'm sure it wasn't, but it was a little bit different from the standpoint of they kind of told me when I was done because it was a situation where medically they were not going to pass me again physically because of the knee the situation that I had going on. And so really I was playing with house money that last year and look, the knee wasn't getting better. It wasn't like it was going to heal during the season. And it just got worse and worse. And pretty soon it got to the point where I could really, I really couldn't run at one point. And then certainly you can't play that game if you can't run. And it wasn't like it was getting better, like I said before. So they knew that pretty much that this was it. And I pretty much knew it was it too. Didn't want to really, obviously, I guess I was in a land of denial for quite some time about it, but nevertheless, I knew that they were right. There was no way that I was going to be able to come back with that.
You think that was Drew's last game yesterday in the Dome and in the Saints uniform, and we'd all love for a Hollywood ending, right, where he throws a touchdown pass to win the Super Bowl, hold a Lombardi, and then retire. But life's not Hollywood. Life is not a movie. We all know that, right? So do you think Drew's done?
I'd hate to speculate. I know that you never want to make a decision, right after a game or no matter how it goes. You never want to be influenced emotionally or in the heat of the battle where your thinking is not as clear as it would be normally when you've given yourself a chance to really sit back and look at the entire big picture of things. And so I think probably if I if I had to speculate, I would think that he's done. But again, I don't want to answer for him because I don't know. He may, you know, February may roll by, March may come through. He may say, you know, I feel really, really good. And, hey, I just feel like it's time for me to continue to play football. I don't know. I don't know how good his body feels. He needs to take an assessment of that, and only he can do that. So I knew that I was done. I knew there was no way. You know, yeah, my body felt better, but my knee wasn't going to get any better until I got a, you know, one that was titanium in there. So that really was a decision that wasn't made specifically. It was made for me instead of by me. So that was a little bit different.
So along those lines, is there a place for Drew Brees if he wants to come back with the Saints?
I don't think there's any doubt. I don't think there's any doubt. I don't think. I mean, what are you telling? No, yeah, we don't. We're not interested. I mean, to me, I think you say, yeah, if you really want to make a go at it, and let's see how spring goes, and you know, training camp goes, and if you're still feeling and looking like the Drew Brees we've grown accustomed to, yeah, why not? But I can't imagine really thinking of any other quarterbacks that would be that you would say no to, you know, in that situation, especially somebody like Drew Brees.
So if he does retire, this team is not going to look like next year's team's not going to look like this one at all. Talk, if you will, Steve, about the salary cap issues that they're facing. They owe Drew Brees a ton of money and cans that have been kicked down the road.
Well, they typically teams do that, and it's you know, it's sort of a it's kind of when they're all, you know, they push their chips in the middle of the table and say, look, we got to, you know, Drew's on his, you know, he's coming down towards the end of his career. We all know that, and he really is in this, and so we're going to get as many players around him as we possibly can, and in doing so, you begin to sort of to kind of fool around with the salary cap and sort of push things out, like you said, into the future and whatnot. And then at some point, you know, you got to pay the piper. But look, these guys are amazing at what they're able to do with these capologists, with some of the things that they're able to do and renegotiate contracts to put, you know, to secure players that might be in free agency and those types of things. They're pretty creative at doing that. Now, some teams are less creative, but at the same time, the Saints have always been really good at that, and they're able to really sort of glean the best players they possibly can without wrecking a salary cap, you know, and I haven't seen a situation to where we've been in this salary cap situation to where it's like, oh man, we're screwed. There's no way we have any money to do anything with anybody. So I've never seen that, especially with us. So I expect it to be the same.
I look into that court crystal ball that's been handed down from generations to generations, carefully handed down. Of course, the courts are big people, so this crystal ball is the size of like a, you know what, like I guess one of these big yoga balls, you know, one of those big things, and it's heavy, but they're big people, so they can carry it. Who's the Saints' starting quarterback next year?
I don't think he's in the building.
Okay.
I think that... you know, you listen to the news and the things that are going on all over the league and things like that with quarterbacks and what happens. And, you know, you've got, you know, these players that, these quarterbacks that are proven good quarterbacks that are sitting out there and they're unhappy for whatever combinations of reasons. And if you can make a series like a situation like that work for you, and look, there's nobody better than Sean Payton about coming to especially a quarterback and getting in this guy's head and sitting with him and saying, look, I can take you to the promised land of being a Hall of Fame quarterback, you know, and there's guys out there that I know that he probably feels like he can tutor and coach and get to the, and make them the best that they can possibly be. And I'm not so sure. Look, I think Taysom Hill is a great football player. I really do. I just don't know if he's I don't know if you can transition him into the quarterback that we envision having. Now, we may have to change our philosophy on that, Tommy. We may have to change and go in a different route and say, look, you know, the league is about these guys that are running a lot, you know, Lamar Jackson and And, you know, even the guy from Buffalo, Josh Allen. I mean, all these guys are just running the football like crazy. And Mahomes and all those guys are doing a lot of things with their legs. And it's kind of gotten the way of that. That's sort of the, you know, Kyler Murray. It's kind of the situation that the league is moving in there, and the direction that it's moving. But I don't know if that's going to fit into to what we do. All I know is that Sean Payton is great at taking the players, not only that he has, but being real creative, what he does with free agent acquisitions and taking those players and plugging them in and making making it work.
Steve, thank you, man, for your time and all this season. And we'll talk to you again soon, all right?
Hey, pleasure's all mine. And if I don't see you before or talk to you before, I'll talk to you, I guess, draft.
I guess, so yeah. So we'll find something to talk to you about. Thank you, Steve.
And the train keeps rolling.
There you go. Speaking of which, they got a little bit of breaking news. The west front of the Capitol has been evacuated after an external security threat. That's what NBC News is reporting. There's not a whole lot of details right now on it, but we, of course, will follow it for you and continue to develop it to give you details as the story develops. A message was sent out to the employees that said all buildings within the Capitol complex, external security threat, no entry or exit is permitted. Stay away from exterior windows, doors if outside. Seek cover. That was from the U.S. Capitol Police. So we'll have details for you as they emerge. 9:35. Zach Strief, when we come back, time for traffic now on WWL.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.